good evening and welcome to the Monroe City Council meeting here for March 13th, 2012. I'd like to call the meeting to order and ask if Ben, if you take a roll call, please.
Councilmember Gary. Cuddeback.
Here.
Williams.
Here.
Camp.
Here.
Davis.
Present.
Gamble.
Here.
Hanford.
Here.
Let the record show that Councilmember Gary did inform me earlier today that he would be a few minutes late this evening. He has a family matter which he needs to take care of. And before we head into the Pledge of Allegiance, I'd like to welcome a group of young women here this evening from Troop 53036. These gals, well, as you can see, range from like 5 to teens. And as always, I'm always honored to have members of both our Girl Scouts and Boy Scouts join us at our meetings. And tonight is a little bit more significant evening, as I have a proclamation to read this evening commemorating the centennial of Girl Scouts of America, or Girl Scouts. So I'd like to ask Robin, Amber, Natalie, and Amy to step forward and please lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance.
To the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Well, while the ladies are still here, the council would indulge me. I'd like to move the proclamation to this point of our agenda and then allow for them to step out if they would like to afterwards. So I have a proclamation, and it is the Year of the Girl. Girl Scouts Centennial Proclamation, a proclamation declaring 2012 as the Year of the Girl and celebrating 100 years of Girl Scouting. Whereas March 12, 2012, marks the 100th anniversary of the Girl Scouts of the United States of America, which began in 1912 when Savannah, Georgia native Juliet Daisy Gordon Lowe gathered 18 girls to provide them the opportunity to develop physically, mentally, and spiritually. And whereas for 100 years, Girl Scouting has helped build millions of girls and women of, has helped build millions of girls and women of courage, confidence, and character who act to make the world a better place. And whereas today, more than 50 million American women are Girl Scout alumni, 3.3 million girls and adult volunteers are active members, and Girl Scouts is the largest member of the World Association of Girl Guides and Girl Scouts, a global movement comprised of more than 10 million girls in 145 countries worldwide. And whereas the award-winning Girl Scout Leadership Program helps girls discover themselves and their values, connect with others, and take action to make the world a better place. And whereas core programs around science, technology, engineering, and math, or STEM, environmental stewardship, healthy living, financial literacy, and global citizenship help girls develop a solid foundation in leadership. And whereas 275 girls from Monroe and dedicated adult volunteers are proud to be part of the Girl Scout tradition in our community. And whereas the Girl Scout Gold Award is the highest honor in Girl Scouting. And whereas as part of the 100th anniversary celebration, girls and adults from Girl Scouts of Western Washington are pledging to live forever green, participating in monthly challenges to explore their impact on the environment and learning ways to lessen their footprint. And whereas through the dedication, time, and talent of volunteers of different backgrounds, abilities, and areas of expertise, our community has donated baby blankets to Valley General Hospital, conducted a blood drive, collected food for the food bank and for local animal shelters, collected aluminum and donated the proceeds to community shelters, and has 35 plus girls and adults have taken the Forever Green Challenge. This year, we are hosting our first day camp that will serve 100 girls. And whereas Girl Scouts is committed to assuring that all girls can participate in Girl Scouts regardless of their financial circumstances, and whereas the Girl Scout program continues to evolve to address the changing societal challenges faced by our community through innovative programs such as Girl Scouts Fostering a Future, which reaches girls living in foster or kinship care, Girl Scouts Beyond Bars, which reaches girls whose parents are incarcerated, Girl Scout Skills for Life, which serves girls who are living in public housing, often immigrants or refugees, and Girl Scouting in the School Day, which partners with schools to reach girls from low-income schools. Now, therefore, I, Robert G. Zimmerman, by virtue of the authority vested in me as mayor of the city of Monroe, do hereby applaud the Girl Scouts of the United States of America for their 100 years of leadership and expertise as the voice for and of girls, the Girl Scouts of Western Washington for providing the local support for Girl Scouting in our community, and the Girl Scouts of Monroe for their courage, confidence, and character to act to make our world a better place, and proudly proclaim 2012 as Year of the Girl. Thank you, ladies, for joining us. So we will have a copy with the official seal provided for you. We'll let you know when that's done, and we'll get that to you. Ladies, thank you for leading the Pledge of Allegiance as well. I appreciate it. Okay, at this time we will then move to comments from citizens. I do have one individual signed up currently. That's Mr. Steve Whalen. I'd like to ask, if you would, you may join us at the podium. I'd also like to ask if you might give your name and address for the record and limit your time to 5 minutes, please.
Thank you, Brad.
Thank you, Mayor Zimmerman. Thank you, City Council members. And before I go any farther, I want to ask, you're aware of the subject matter. Is it okay with some younger children if I address this?
Maybe Mary Jane is who it's concerning.
Yes.
Thank you.
Don't mean to be rude. I just want to be careful before I brush it up.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you. I came here to express my concern about the issue of marijuana growth in Monroe. My views on the growth of medicinal marijuana are actually still kind of formulating. Abuse of the substance, without a doubt, is sinful, immoral, and destructive. However, the controlled use of it for medicinal purposes in extreme cases is still something with which I wrestle. I've told my wife on a number of occasions, if I get ravaged by some terminally painful disease, I want that available, and she has told me under no uncertain circumstances, no way. I do feel, however, that it should not be grown in Monroe, or anywhere for that matter, apart from rigidly controlled, licensed growers with very strict oversight. In my observation, the current practice, as it has been in Washington and in other states, where the growing of marijuana for medicinal purposes is permitted, has been far, far too loose and unsupervised. The expense to the city of Monroe for effective supervision and enforcement of the requisite laws and policies make the notion of legalized growing marijuana in our community, in my opinion, untenable. The issue has also caused friction in the arena of states' rights versus federal oversight, and frankly, I don't believe that controlled substances should be the focal point of that discussion. I have done some recent research, but not exhaustive, on any level of the issues surrounding the use of marijuana or cannabis, tetrahydrocannabinol, for medicinal purposes. My most extensive research involves some unofficial clandestine experiments in the 1970s. My recollection is a little bit vague, and there is no remaining data. While it did not have the effects on me that stronger narcotics did, it did produce a slowly developing apathy toward life that hindered me from the passion about anything and damaged my ambition and work ethic. My conversion to Jesus Christ is what rescued me from this downward life spiral. A society of grown men and women living in their parents' basement, taking bomb hits and powering ho-hos, is not good for any community. I would like to strongly urge the governing authorities of Monroe to prohibit the growth and or production of marijuana in any fashion. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Okay, at this time I don't have anybody else signed up to speak before City Council proceeding, but this is your opportunity to speak to Council on any issue except any quasi-judicial matter subject to a public hearing. If you would like, you may approach the podium, provide your name and address for the record, and thank you very much.
Thank you. My name is Jeff Rasmussen, 16655 150th Street, Southeast here in Monroe. A conversation I had recently with a gentleman, there's three words that come to mind that really stuck with me. He says, perception becomes reality. And the more I thought about this and the more I took into account what I'm doing, what I'm looking at, I thought, wow, this is fitting, to say the least. The unfortunate perception that's amongst many of our citizens out there with everything going on, Kelsey, East Monroe, Wakeboard, everything out there, the perception is that our citizens are not being listened to by our elected leaders. That is the perception. Now, as an advocate for finding alternatives for our venue, the Wakeboard venue at Lake Tai, and keeping Lake Tai as it is, I've done a lot of research and looking through the various emails and information, and sadly, I do feel that perception, which I did feel it was a perception until I got involved, is now reality. Of all the comments that I read in all those emails from actual citizens voicing their concerns, and to only be told that change is tough or something to that effect, is very disappointing and very disheartening. You know, it is a sad reality, and what makes it even hit home even that much more is as I go out and talk to my neighbors just to see if they are aware of the current proposal. I talked to a gentleman right across the street from me asking him if he was aware, and he was aware, and he was actually pretty well educated on the proposal, and he shared a lot of his concerns with me. And I asked him if he had shared these concerns with a letter to council, and his response was truly, why would I do that? They don't listen to me anyway. Guys, this is the reality that we're in. And, you know, don't get me wrong, I do feel that there are some up here that truly listen to our citizens. They've even cited on record that I'm here for the citizens that elected us. But as a vast majority, that's not the case. And that is the perception, that is the reality that's out there. You know, we want to grow as a community. And if we want to grow and flourish as a community, citizens have got to trust their leaders. Leaders have got to listen to their citizens and take what they're saying and take their concerns to value and to heart. If they don't, they're going to be mistrusted. There's not going to be any trust amongst our leaders. It's going to be very difficult to grow with the support of your citizens. It's a tough call, I know. There's a lot of stuff on the table. You're in a tough position, whether it be the finances of the city or pending contracts or pending legal status, whatever it may be. You've got some tough choices. But this should not be one of them. Listening to your citizens should be the easiest choice you have as an elected official. But for whatever reason, the perception is that it's being made the hardest choice out there. I'm asking you today, let's work together with your citizens and elected officials. Let's get together. Let's work. Let's make things right. And let's move forward. You know? And I'm not talking just Wakeboard, which is the Lake Tai, which is my passion right now. But I'm talking about North Kelsey. I'm talking about East Monroe. I'm talking about the cameras. I'm talking about our entire city. Let's work together and become one instead of working against each other. Because I don't know about you, but this is exhausting. I can't imagine what you guys are going through, having all these issues on your plate. I'm dealing with one, and it's the one that I'm very passionate about. You guys are dealing with them all. So the call shouldn't be that hard. Let's do it right. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Okay, is there anyone else in the audience who'd like to address council this evening? I'm smiling. Joel, come on now. Cameras, let's do it. No, I can't.
I thought you had my information already.
No,
505 Circle Drive, Monroe, obviously. Since we've been talking about the cameras, trying to bring them back in to the chambers, I was just wondering, Mayor, if you would need some outside help to look for different type of cameras to bring in, as in different name brands or what so have you.
Well, that would most likely be answered best by our IT manager,
okay. Who
is not here this evening.
Okay.
And Denise, I would have to refer what assistance she might need with regards to that research and so forth. Denise Bremner is our IT manager, and we'll pass along to her that you're willing to help and support, if that's what I'm hearing.
I'll do it for free, too.
Yeah.
So, thanks.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Joel.
Okay. Anyone else like to address?
I neglected to give my name and stuff on the and
We got you. We got you on your sheet. Thank you for filling that out. Okay, moving on here, then we will go to the first item on new business. The next item on new business, that's a public hearing. Roosevelt Ridge proposed zoning regulations, first public hearing. And Paul?
Thank you, Mayor. I have just a few slides to give you a brief, very brief overlook on this. Map of the property, it's north of the proposed bypass for Highway 2, west of Robin Hood on the east, and that would be 175th Street coming from the north down into the Roosevelt property. Aerial view. A little bit of history. This goes back to about 2005 when the comp plan was designated for this, which translated into this proposal for zoning. We call it a pre-annexation zoning, but since this is in the urban growth area, the city does have the authority to assign zoning to these parcels. If it is annexed, then we can begin to enforce that zoning. If it's not annexed, the zoning will remain in place until such time as it comes into the city. The undeveloped areas in the darker color are in the land use of 5 to 7 units per acre. The built areas, as you can see, are 2 to 5 per acre, and that translates into those current zones in our municipal code. The effective rate is about, and you are 6,000, you're probably looking at six homes per acre. In the 9,600, you're probably looking at about 4 by the time you actually are able to build. That's really about it. I'd be happy to take any questions before we get into public hearing.
Councilmember Kennedy.
Thank you. Paul, I see the airplanes over that. Is that in the overlay at all as we look at developing? Does the overlay affect if there's any new development in that undeveloped area?
That line reflects the the notice zone that we're actually acting on later on tonight, so that those property owners south of that line do fall within that huge influence area. I forget how many feet it is from the airport, but some of those 2,100 properties that we need to notify are in that triangle.
But my question is, that undeveloped area, would the airport overlay and that, does that affect development in that area?
No, not at all.
Okay.
Only within those very close zones immediately adjacent to the airport.
Okay.
But the influence zone does not have any impact on development standards or
even
what you can build.
Even if the airport overlay is changed, because it's different. I mean, it is what it is right now, but that might be changing. That the change doesn't affect that either?
No.
Okay.
Well, this perimeter is pretty much set.
Okay. Thanks.
Councilmember Williams.
Thank you, Mayor. Paul, if you can go back to the couple slides. That's one. No, it's the one that showed that right there. What's the rationale for making those two potential zones different? Why would one be UR 9600 and the other be UR 6000?
Well, the 96, well, there's two things. One is that the comp plan and resultant zoning that the city exercises is to be consistent with the county zoning. And this fulfills that to some extent. But beyond that, the 9600 areas where it is built, those are more closely aligned with the 9600 zone in terms of the number of lots or the density. And the undeveloped areas, we're looking at a slightly higher, maybe 5 or 6 units per acre instead of, say, 4 or 5, to make some gains toward our targets for additional housing. So that's the basic explanation.
Thank you. Okay. Any other questions from council? Well, at this time, we do invite members of the audience to speak to council with respect to the public hearing, that is specifically the Roosevelt Ridge zoning regulations. I don't have anybody signed up, so if there's anybody in the audience who'd like to address council, you may do so at this time by approaching the podium and providing your name and address for the record. I also would like to ask that you can limit your time to 5 minutes. All right, not going to stare much longer. It doesn't look like there's anyone who'd like to speak tonight. So at this point, then I entertain a motion to close the public testimony portion of the public hearing.
So moved.
Second.
All right, motion's been made by Councilmember Williams, seconded by Councilmember Cutterback to close the public testimony portion of the public hearing. All those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, then Council, Paul, it's yours once again if you have any further questions or comments with regards to the proposed zoning. Thank you, ladies.
Order them to bring cookies next.
Yeah, that's right.
Paul, just a reminder, this was actually the first of two public hearings. The next one would be April, about a month from now.
Okay, if there's no questions, and given the fact about a second public hearing here in about a month, and we'll entertain a motion to close the public hearing.
So moved.
Second.
All right. The motion's been made by Councilmember Cutterback and seconded by Councilmember Camber. With that, all those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, moving on to new business. Transportation Benefit District Review Formation Ordinance and Set Hearing Date. Ms. Fowler.
Hi there. Let me get my cover sheet here. Yep. We met several times about this. Most recently was February 14th, with direction from the council to bring back an ordinance that established a transportation benefit district with two restrictions on it. One is that the transportation benefit district would only be able to impose fundraising activities that were approved by the voters, and the other one that it would not be able to issue any debt. Those two ordinances are attached. I also put in two other choices for you. One is to have the Transportation Benefit District able to fund capital projects and maintenance, or one ordinance just capital projects only. So if we are interested in going to an election this November, we need to decide which one you want to do and bring that back to you for a public hearing in the near future and adopt and set up that Transportation Benefit District. And if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Councilmember Kennedy.
Thank you. I'm trying to remember if we talked about projects and maintenance, but I can't remember if a couple weeks ago when we talked about this, it would seem like it would make sense to me that we include both to have that option. Is that what you're recommending?
Well, yeah, we did. We did talk about it last month. In the end of 2011, when we talked about this, there was the concern about if you're going out to voters for funding, they want to see something, you know, we're going to build this as opposed to fix a model. So right. Just for that idea, but there's nothing that restricts you from
doing
that later when you actually go out to vote. So,
well, so my question around that is, because you've put a list of the projects
yes.
to include to show voters this is what we would be working on, mm-hmm. which makes sense. How do you include the maintenance part in there to let them know what we're going to maintain, or is it a general statement?
It's a general statement in the language of the ordinance. There's a couple extra whereases that say that this is also for maintenance.
Okay. And is it maintenance that we decide, or is it a certain amount? I'm sorry, I didn't pay attention.
Yeah, it doesn't limit that it's 50-50, 60-40, or anything like that. It's just the Transportation Benefit District Board, which is you folks, would decide that we have this much money, this is what we're going to do with it.
Okay. Okay. Thanks, Fred.
Mm-hmm. Councilmember Williams.
Thank you, Mayor. Is the projects on the attachments, are those up to date?
Yes.
Because they're...
I hope.
One wasn't.
Oh, okay, did I miss
one? As I'm looking through the document, there's the dates, you know, first and final reading say 7-6 of 2010.
I didn't change those parts. Yeah, but I did change the. At least attempted to change the projects.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that the 13 projects that are on there now are the ones that would be candidates to be included in.
Correct.
Brad, what I see in here is the two attachments were different. Attachment A, because on one you took off the Kelsey West Main signal because we already have
right, yeah, that one.
But on one, it's still on there.
The second one, okay.
So, thanks.
So it should be on this. It should be the one that is associated with the project only. Version of the ordinance.
Is that the right list?
That's the list that we
so it's 12 then, not 13.
Still 13, I think what we've included there is the Hill Street extension is on there as well. Mm-hmm. That's potential, where the other one does not. And then I think the other one had the US 2, mm-hmm. which this one does not.
Okay, and then my other question is, do we have some indication of which of these projects, the priority of these projects, which ones are ready to go versus which ones would take more study in order to get going on? And do we have budgets for any of them?
We have estimated costs, no funding for any of them, and they are in the order that previous councils have indicated they would like to see things done, except for the Hill Street extension. Because that's a new one I just put at the bottom.
So one of the concerns that I had, you know, I've moved off of the stance of no ability to borrow money for these projects. But one of the concerns I had is that going and telling the citizens that we're going to impose a tax for projects that we're not really ready to start yet, and that we don't have a good understanding of the cost. I still have a little bit of a hardship with that. One of the thoughts that I had is limiting these to jobs, projects that are more shovel-ready that we have better numbers on. And I'd be interested to hear either from you or from anyone else what their thoughts are on that.
Okay. We really don't have any. None of these projects are shovel-ready except Fremont Street we're in the midst of working on to do that. Because there is no funding. They have not been done. Kelsey Street, US 2, we have a fairly good, because that's already been designed. But that may or may not be replaced by the Hill Street extension. So, you know, that list is still up in the air of whether you want to keep those things on for that. The other ones is, this is also what you're doing by establishing the Transportation Benefit District is not funding it, because that's for the Transportation Benefit District Board, which would then decide you're going to go to the voters for X to fund this sub-list of projects. So it's not, this isn't set in stone right now, even if you do adopt this ordinance to form that, and they're not charging anybody any money yet. So this just leaves the opportunity for things that the Transportation Benefit District could fund.
And I also didn't catch in here whether or not this grants authority to impose sales tax increases or voter or license tab increases or both.
Yes, but it says in section, if you look in the ordinance part 12.40.030, exercise all the powers and functions provided by chapter 36.73, except the two, which say to impose taxes, fees, and tolls, not requiring voter approval. So that chapter of the RCW allows you to do the wide range of things. So you can do tolls, license tabs, a mitigation fee, and the sales tax increase. And both the license tab, are voter approved and non-voter approved.
Okay. I would be against non-voter approved license tab fees. But that's just me. Thank you.
Ability to impose taxes, fees, charges, tolls, not requiring the approval of voters. So accept that. So in all of those things, we'll need the voters,
yes,
including the tab fees, is how I'm reading that there. And then it sounded as though the second portion of that, the ability to issue general obligation bonds and revenue bonds, you might suggest striking that from the language. It sounded as if you said you were moving away from borrowing against future revenue.
Yeah, I'm not as concerned about that as I was before. I'm concerned about just going out and I believe that we have the ability to go and get and raise $10 per license tab or something.
$20
without voter approval.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And I would be against it if that language was still in there.
But again, I just want to be clear that it sounded as though, just from your statement, that we could strike number two from this, because it sounded as if you were saying you were not opposed to that any longer, which this says that we will not.
That's correct.
Issue. Okay, so we could, if the rest of the council were to move forward on either one, we could strike that. Going to, if I might, Councilmember Williams, just with regards to the attachment or to the list, a lot of these things go back to when I first started on council. And, you know, the idea of setting a priority to these and moving forward with any types of plans, expectations and stuff, it's really been difficult. You know, I mean, we've essentially been with our hands tied behind our backs because we don't have dollar one to accomplish any of them, for that matter, or very few of them. The Fremont Street improvements we're moving forward with, but that's, you know, through some other funds, so on and so forth. So, speaking on behalf of staff, which we've had conversations, they would love to have that information for you, but it's been one of those things we're not going to go through the exercise because we've never had the money to really do it. It's like spending, you know, hours upon hours to look, you know, try to buy a $100,000, you know, Class A motorhome, which I did one time, and you know, without ever being the reality that it's going to happen, you know, so it was wasted my time. Not that it's wasted theirs completely, but with respect to that, that's why we don't have a lot of that information. Councilmember Gamble?
But we know enough that we don't have enough money. That's a piece of...
Yeah.
I'm trying to get, because... So how many years? You said that these have been on here since you were on council. So how many years are we talking about?
2007 is when the transportation plan was done.
So what? Do we have some... I'm assuming we have some sort of broad numbers or, mm-hmm. or something like that.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, that's what he said. We have estimates as to what we have. But in, to Councilmember Williams, shovel ready? Are any of them shovel ready? Have we done any of the planning and things like that? We haven't gone so far as to do that because there's been no money to do that, those portions of those of the projects.
This is in the priority of what we would like to see shovel ready. Is that what I'm getting? Or past recommendations?
Past recommendations. This was the order except for the last two, which are our new projects that previous councils had indicated was their preference.
No, I hear what you're saying, Mr. Mayor. I'm struggling with that. And if there's ones that we know that we want to do, come after high water, I know we don't have the money now, but it just would seem to me that somewhere along the lines we want to put some forth effort to get it better than just estimate.
Well, let's talk about what's the road between Albertsons? I always forget that.
Tierney.
No, not Tierney. Albertsons and Safeway, that road.
Albertsons
and
Safeway. Oaks.
No. Between Albertsons and Safeway.
Woods Creek.
Woods Creek.
Yeah.
We did a study on Woods Creek with regards to the sidewalk and so
right.
forth. That cost $100,000.
Correct.
We don't have $100,000 to do the studies and do the preparation for many of these things. So that's why the preparation has not been done. There isn't the money there. So we'd love to do all the preparation with regards to these so that we could have a shovel-ready project.
So let me, again, these are studies that you're going to have to do anyway when we decide to do them, correct?
Correct.
Could you give
them? Yeah, go ahead.
Well, when we did the transportation plan in 2007, they were kind of prioritized in that order. So there is a somewhat of a list. And I guess one comment I would make, we never know when we might get extra matching funds for a project that might move one project up the priority because we've got a grant or something too. So I think while I understand you want to put them in priority, I do agree with the mayor that it's kind of a moving target sometimes, and then things change and our growth might change in 5 years and what we thought was our first project might change, and then depending on grants we get or funding that's available, that might change. So we do have a list, and it was somewhat prioritized in 2007. We have a list here. I think that's kind of as good as it's going to get for right now, and I'm okay with that, especially when we go out for funding. We're going to sub-list that because we'll know then probably when we go out for funding which ones we're exactly going to do, and that would be presented to the voter, correct? So they will know, and we will be moving forward on those projects that we put forward, correct? So, as a council member, I'm okay with that.
Councilmember Gilbert, can you pass it to the floor?
Okay.
Judy? Councilmember Canada.
Thank you. Bro, can you go over the sales tax again? Wasn't it, if it was over a certain amount, we had to go to voters anyways? What's that?
Sales tax always has to go to the voters.
But wasn't there...
You can go up to 0.2%.
Okay, so 0.2%.
You can do anything less than or including 0.2%.
So I'm going to be a little bit of the flip side here about maybe not hamstringing us with not being able to do anything without voter approval. We're looking at this situation. We don't have the money. We haven't had the money. We've had these projects on for so long. People have elected us to make decisions for them. Nobody likes an increase in taxes. We might never get any of these, projects done if we always have to go to the voters. If we're looking at a project that's specifically in the downtown area, you might get people up Chain Lake Road that never vote for it. And I've had discussions with another council member, and I agree, as council as a whole, we have to look at the whole picture. So I'm open to looking at that and being a little bit more flexible on giving council a little bit more authority in helping to, you know, get some funds for these projects. If we always have to go out to the voters for the project, they might never happen. So I just would love to hear other council members' thoughts on that.
Now, were you speaking specifically to the sales tax?
Yeah, well, the sales tax specifically, because I know we have the ability to do that. I mean, the $20 card, I mean, we have it up to the two tenths that we can do that.
No, any sales tax always has to go to the voter.
Oh, I thought you said... Okay, so yeah,
it's... The amount of tax that we can...
Okay, so that is the cap, but it always has to go
out. It always has to go to the voters,
so
yeah.
What don't we have to go out to the voter for? Is it just the
tabs? Just the $20 tabs.
And that's it?
That's it.
That's it.
Yeah.
And when you ran those numbers before on the $20 tabs, it was minimal for Monroe, wasn't it?
They're not... Last time we did this, no one really knows, because DMV doesn't keep track of things by city limits. They keep track of things by zip codes. So we were assuming we had somewhere around, 8,000 cars or something like that. I think so. That's, $160,000 a year.
Okay. So I would not be adverse to council having that decision of a $20 tab. Come on. Start fighting me.
Councilmember Gamble.
$160,000 for a $20 car tab just doesn't... I don't know if it's falling on the sword for it. That's my...
What's the sword?
What's that? Well, we know that we have plenty of stuff before us that says any increase right now would be a huge backlash. We just heard comments from the citizen saying, to the citizens of Monroe. And there's plenty of stuff out there that says, as much as I may personally sit here and think and agree with you, hey, it's not that big a deal. We have a lot of evidence that says otherwise. And I don't know if $160,000 is really worth it, to be honest, because even though, I'm asking the questions on how the estimates on these projects, I've got a pretty good idea. They're in the millions. So to fund one project, you're talking about 20 years of car tax. Best point.
And it's restricted to city of Monroe residents only, whereas sales tax is something that can be spread out amongst those who are visiting as well. So.
Now, for the maintenance side, that might be a different story. Pothole side of things.
I'm still looking for people who want to sponsor a pothole. All right. Thank you, Councilmember Williams.
Thank you, Mayor. Yeah, I just want to echo what Councilman Gamble said, that we have, if I recall, we had some of these projects that were, 2.3 million, some fairly large ones. And so if we go out and say, we're going to just impose this tax that is going to take 20 years before it pays off one of these projects, I don't think that gets us what we want. The other concern I have is that it then forces only citizens of Monroe to pay for roads that other people are using, which is why I was more in favor of the sales tax. I wasn't clear until Brad just mentioned it, though, that the sales tax was only voter-approved, that we had no ability to issue that. So I thought too.
There is one other thing I forgot. There is a one-year property tax that you can also do.
But again, that's
not a whole lot of money. Yeah.
I'm imagining that this total project is probably in the, 10, $12 million range?
At least.
Yeah.
I think it's more than that.
$160,000 a year is the kind of...
Councilmember Hamlin.
I hear what you're saying, Councilmember Kodak, about the... voted us in to make these decisions and to find that out and speak with the Supreme Court ruling and all that. But and I think I agree with you about that. If it was obvious that we would be able to get this done with, this little $20 fee, but I agree with what we're saying here is that it's not worth the $20 tab fee to get people upset to get one planning thing done for one project. So
thank you, Councilmember Gamble.
I guess, you know, maybe one of the things that we could look at, because you've got two recommendations here, is one's for project maintenance, correct?
Correct.
Is that if we did break it out, right, where we were looking at, you know, hey, you know, if we wanted to, we were looking to fund the maintenance, and I don't know, you know, what are we thinking maintenance-wise as a budget?
Well, based on
nothing now.
Yeah, it's very limited now. We've basically taken most of it away from those little gas tax that we get.
But. So here's where I'm going with this: is that if we could show, you know, on the maintenance side, so let's just take the $20 tab fee. If you were to look at, and this would be whether we vote for it or not, it would be, hey, what are we going to get with $160,000? You know, what would be the plan of action from a maintenance perspective? And then break off the capital piece to Councilmember Williams' point, where you were really going to look to get more, more dollars and a faster return on, or an ability to deliver faster on the capital project side. So maybe kind of separating the two, having a capital strategy and an expense strategy. I'm sorry, yeah, capital and maintenance side. Expense and maintenance in my business for the same thing.
Sorry. Councilmember Davis.
Yeah, I'll throw my two cents in there. I was just thinking about this not too long ago. I remember paying $170-$200 registration fees. Just thought I had a bad taste in my mouth from getting that 5-year-old car. And I've got two vehicles coming up, and I'm looking at it going, starting to go up again, a little bit at a time, but it's going up again. Creep is coming in. I think everything that's been said kind of comes into play there. I think you will get a lot of people that remember that and say, they're doing it again. They're not listening to us. We went through that a long time ago. We've settled that. And in relation to that, I believe probably that sales tax is the first way to do that. If we go down that road, instead of having a select few people in the city paying for everything, we're going to spread it out amongst all the users. We should go down that road instead.
Well, and a decision doesn't need to be made tonight. I mean, really, the recommended action for tonight is to set a public hearing or a hearing for the public to weigh in on both options. I guess, unless you want to just bring one back in April as recommended here by Brad Felbert, one or the other, or possibly both. Can you have a hearing on the TBD and still allow for public to comment on the either or?
Correct, yeah. It's a public hearing on whether or not to form a transportation benefit district.
Yeah. So a lot of those questions may be answered at that time too after your hearing from the public as well. Councilmember Lynch.
Thank you. I wouldn't want to see us handcuff ourselves and say it's, we can't include maintenance in it. However, just because we can include it doesn't mean it's going to pass. So I don't think there's a harm in including it for both maintenance and for going forward. So I'm in favor of it, provided that there's language just stating that the license tabs would go. That's the only change I think I would make. Do we have any projections of what 0.2% of sales tax would bring in on an annual basis?
Diane.
Well, so it's 3.2 million, isn't it?
Yeah.
Is what we're getting? So 0.1% is 320,000.
Well, we're getting 2.9.
Oh, 2.9, okay, so 290,000 now.
Yeah.
For 1%.
For what? 0.1%.
Yes, so double that. So it'd be
600.
7.
Yeah, 600.
7, 580. 7, 8.
580. No, 290.
Oh, 290. I thought you said 390. Yeah, sorry. 290.
Okay.
Okay, well, then I don't know that we need to have a motion, but maybe by consensus, nodding of heads, we'll have Brad move forward. Councilor Gill, will you?
Yeah, but the one thing that we were going to make an amendment on was the borrowing piece, correct?
Yeah, to remove that?
Yes, because I think one of the things that is crucial upon this is that if this does go through, then we can start to look on concrete funds coming in and we can borrow against what we would be expecting, you know, against the tabs and the, that money, so that you're doing it now and then. Does that make sense?
You're going to need that.
Correct. Yeah. You're going to need that ability.
So we'll strike number two of 12.40.30 functions of the district. Except the following, strike number two, and then since we're going for both the project and for maintenance, we'll bring back the project and maintenance ordinance with the correct attachment A for the night of the public hearing. Councilmember Kent.
Me too. Does anybody up here remember why we included that originally? I was trying to picture it.
Included what?
The restriction on general obligation bonds or revenue bonds.
Yeah, that was Councilor Williams.
Yeah, I think.
Was there a reason why?
Yeah.
The reason that I brought up initially was right after we had a discussion on how we were going to pay our bonds, that we started talking about how we can start borrowing more money. And so I thought it would seem wise.
Okay.
All right. Okay. Well, then we will move forward in that direction and look to schedule the public hearing for April 10th. Moving right along, ordinance amending mixed-use setbacks. This is the first reading. And Paul. Okay.
Thank you, Mayor. We've been here twice before with this. You may recall last week, County Council was prepared to approve a first reading, but for lack of an ordinance. But tonight we do have an ordinance in the package, and hoping for your first reading approval and the second reading next week. But be happy to answer some questions if anyone.
However, has any. I would like to remind Council that last week we were there was a motion to waive the processes to allow for first and final. And so since we've talked about this for a few weeks, if council is wanting to move in that direction, it certainly can. Right.
I'm sorry. It was a commerce question. Department of, not revenue.
Any questions for Paul? Anyone like to make a motion to waive, or should we just make a motion to approve as first reading? Councilmember Williams?
I'll make the motion to accept as first reading an ordinance of the City of Monroe, Washington, updating 18.10, planning and zoning of the Monroe Municipal Code.
Second.
All right, motion has been made by Councilmember Williams and seconded by Councilmember Cutterback. To accept as a first reading an ordinance of the City of Monroe, Washington, updating Chapter 18.10, Planning and Zoning of the Monroe Municipal Code. And I'll ask City Administrator Braswell if you would read the official title of the ordinance.
Ordinance number 007-2012, an ordinance of the City of Monroe, Washington, updating Chapter 18, Planning and Zoning of the Monroe Municipal Code to provide greater flexibility for single-family residents in the mixed-use neighborhood center zoning district as referenced in 18.10 MMC, providing for severability and fixing a time when the same shall become effective.
All right. Any questions for Paul or... And we vote on the motion then. All those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Oops. Okay. All right. Moving on back to the, I feel like I'm watching a ping pong game here between the two of them. Back for tennis. Authorize mayor to sign municipal stormwater capacity grant amendment. And Brad, as you.
State wants to give us money.
That's it.
I recommend you vote yes. So this is the money we used last year. We got $100,000 from the Washington State Department of Ecology, and we used that to purchase the Badger truck. So this is the state's attempt to assist with the requirements they've imposed upon the cities as part of the Phase 2 stormwater permits. And so they had another round of money up for people, and this time it's a $50,000 amendment to the last grant. So we'd be happy to take it.
Councilmember Kent.
I'd like to move to that we authorize the mayor to sign the municipal stormwater capacity grant amendment to receive $50,000 for stormwater water implementation.
Second.
Motion has been made by Councilmember Camp and seconded by Councilmember Hanford to authorize the mayor to sign the municipal stormwater capacity grant amendment to receive $50,000 for stormwater MPDES implementation. Any further questions? And we'll go ahead and take a vote. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? I'm waiting for a nay there.
It's very nice of the state.
Yes, it is.
Take our money and give it back.
Yeah, thank you. Okay, moving right along here. Ordinance amending airport compatibility zone notice requirements, second and final reading. Paul.
I think we're up for a final reading tonight on this. We're actually a little bit ahead of schedule. And we have until the end of the month to mail out these notices to 2,100 plus properties. And we will get that done ahead of time. But you may get some calls or questions or curiosity from citizens when after they do receive this. They will list contact information for here at the city, so we'll try and field any questions, but just be aware that folks may stop in the courtroom and say, what's this? But hopefully we get them the answers that they need.
Councilmember Hanford.
So just to clarify, we decided we were mailing postcards saying go to the website and see the city for the information. Is that correct?
The postcard gives basic information. In that fact, there's some explicit language in the zoning code that says you will say this minimally. But then it also originally required that we send, I think it would have been 6 or 7 pages of from the code to each address. But we will, in lieu of sending this, we'll have a map, some real basic information, then some contact information for myself, or for City Hall, the website address. Copies available here so that if anybody does have questions, they can number different ways to contact us. And we'll save a tremendous amount of time and money.
Wonderful.
As well as get people used to visiting our website for the information that is available. Councilmember Gamble.
The website, are we going to have a direct link to where it's located, or is it just going to the homepage?
A direct link.
Okay, good.
That would be best to click once and
exactly.
Be there.
That's great. I just wanted to make sure that we'll just send them to the front.
Let the record show that Councilmember Garion has entered the council chambers at 8 p.m. Right. Okay. Do I have a motion to accept the second and final reading ordinance 005-2012 zoning code amendment ZCA 2012-01 to amend Chapter 18.60 of the Monroe Municipal Code modifying notice requirements for the airport compatibility overlay zone. I'll surrender.
So moved.
All right.
Second.
All right. Motion's been made by Councilmember Gamble and seconded by Councilmember Cutterback. We do have an official title of the ordinance. I'll ask City Administrator Brazel to read that.
Ordinance number 005-2012, an ordinance of the City of Monroe, Washington, updating Chapter 18, Planning and Zoning of the Monroe Municipal Code to create a more efficient and effective process for all disclosure notices to property owners within the Airport Compatibility Zone Overlay District, providing for severability and fixing the time when the same shall become effective.
Any other questions for Paul or comments from council? Seeing none, then we'll go ahead and vote on the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Thank you. We're making progress.
We are. Ahead, I like the point where you said we're ahead of schedule. Very good. Good job. Okay. Next on the agenda, lift hiring freeze. Chief Quinter.
We are asking, the police department is asking that the hiring freeze be lifted. We're anticipating an extended medical absence in administrative staff. The assistance is needed in completing the tasks associated with the sorting and filing of infractions and other clerical duties as assigned. This position will be funded with revenue from traffic infractions, DUI, and other misdemeanor arrests. If you would like to hear the duties this individual would be doing, I'm more than happy to provide those to you.
An important piece, I think, Chief, is that we do have an individual. I'm sorry, I was reading. I don't know if you said this. I apologize. We have an individual who's going out on maternity leave, and we need somebody to help fill or that.
Yes.
You didn't say it. I'm sorry. Councilmember Cutter.
Thank you. So, Chief, what's the cost to the budget? You'll probably tank both, obviously, or maybe not. So,
pardon me?
What's the cost to the budget, the additional cost?
It is a temporary position, so they are only allowed to work 9 months out of the year.
Okay.
And it'll be approximately $1,157 a month. So total, if we use the individual for 9 months, it'd be a little less than $10,000 for the year. There are no benefits involved in this.
And so is this on top of, so is this an increase in the budget, or is it?
It would be a item that we did not have in our budget, but we have sufficient revenue coming in from our traffic infractions, and as I said, DUIs and like that would cover this.
It.
Yes.
Thanks.
All right. Any other questions for the chief, or do we have a motion for the hiring freeze for the hiring of a part-time temporary administrative aide? Councilmember Campbell.
I'll move to the hiring freeze for the hiring of part-time temporary administrative aide.
Second. Motion has been made by Councilmember Camp and seconded by Councilmember Gary. All right, any further questions for the chief? Okay, all those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Just in time. City addresses, annex properties. Mr. Feilberg. You enjoy this one, don't you?
After listening carefully to the discussion at the last time we talked about this on October 11th of last year, it looked like there were three proposals put forth by council. One was to leave the house numbers and the street names the same and change the properties within the city limits of Monroe to the post office of Monroe with the zip code of 98272. Another one was to change the house numbers and streets to comply with the city grid centered on Main and Lewis, in addition to changing everybody to the Monroe post office. And then the third was to have the main streets entering the city be on the city grid rather than the county grid, and that would only result in changing 179th Avenue to something like Hospital Road. And it pretty much came down to we should really ask the people what they think. So my recommendation is not to make any changes at all and just leave it alone. But the alternative one is to set a date of July 17th, 2012 for a public meeting to receive comments from citizens concerning this.
Councilmember Hanford.
Brad, is there a reason the date is so far out for that public meeting?
Yes, because we have lots of things to do between now and then, because we're trying to get through the comp plan amendments on the 3rd of July.
Councilor Geary.
Thank you. And thanks, Brad. While I don't agree with your recommended action, I'll just throw in a couple comments. One of the reasons why I think this is something that at least we should consider taking to the public. We talk a lot about a long-term vision for Monroe and creating, you know, having a small-town feel and yet, you know, economic development. And a way to accomplish that is when you think of any other small town, there's a start to where that is. And how far away you are from that is how the streets are measured. And we are 17 miles from Everett. And when I think, you know, we are so much more of our own place now. We're a place that's of its own, with its own identity, growing and with lots of different economic opportunities. You know, how about instead of living on 167th Avenue, you live on 27th Avenue? It gives you more of a sense of where you live in town. That's my underlying reason for wanting to at least take a look at this. I understand that street signs are expensive, and if this was something that was to happen, obviously it would need to happen in a phased approach. We have an old legacy Monroe numbering system. You know, I lived here for 14 years, and why wasn't it ever expanded? Specifically, south of Highway 2 and west of 522, there's the old system, and all of a sudden it starts with county, even in more of the legacy parts of town. So you look at Kirkland, they've got their own numbering system. You look at Snohomish, when you annex and you become part of their new system. So considering those options, maybe we just leave everything the way that it is. You know, if we're going to change somewhere, we should change it all, right? For a number two thing. Otherwise, pretty much just leave it alone. But I think there's advantages to creating that sense of community, creating a sense of place when you have, just simply by the numbers of your streets, makes it feel smaller, and it's a way to tie all the neighborhoods together. So that's kind of my underlying thinking behind why I would be interested in doing this at all. Costs aside, where are you in relation to downtown? We want downtown to be a focus in town. Well, why not have the Freelands be in the 20s rather than the 160s from Everett? Shouldn't we be focused on our own town? Anyway, there's that. So. I think ultimately, one of my first questions, there were two things. There's that, and then there's when we annex somebody in, and it still has a Snohomish address. So for me, those are two different things. As quickly as possible, I think number one and number two, we want the Roosevelt Road area. We want the, and I'm assuming Roosevelt Bridge proposed zoning, assuming that went forward earlier tonight. We want that to switch to Monroe School District, to Monroe, Washington, on 8272 as quickly as possible. To me, there are two things. There's number one and there's number two. So I think there's long-term benefits to it. Obviously, it's something we'd have to budget for over a number of years. If we were going to change everything, there's a bit of work there. And there are other high-priority items than this, I understand. But it's a long-term, it's a long-term implementation of making, tying this community together. We have these unique areas. Yeah, and to me, this is a way that you are possibly able to do that. So, anyway, I'm not in favor of making no changes, but I'm certainly, at least number one, we need to get the post office, get it switched to Monroe, and 98272 as quickly as possible. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Calipan.
Thank you. I appreciate Councilmember Hearing's comments, especially about it being two issues, you know, the annexation and then, you know, changing all the city streets. As a second issue. A couple questions, Brad. I thought you had given us a number of how much it would cost to change one sign.
I said $124 for one sign, and then if there were two signs on the post, it would be about $150.
Okay. And so that's changing one sign, like a street sign that says it's... Okay. And then I guess I'm unclear about leave house number and street name the same, but change to a post office of Monroe with the zip code? What does that mean?
Yeah, so like Roosevelt Road would stay Roosevelt Road with 138.
Right,
you know,
their house address.
But yeah, it'd be Monroe, Washington instead of Snohomish, Washington.
Okay. And so that's not changing any street signs. It's just it's the resident having to change their addresses.
And getting the post office to actually do it.
And getting the post office.
Because we don't control that. The post office controls that.
Okay. Okay. I'd be interested, you know, in the public hearing and hearing what public have to say, maybe on kind of separating the issues. Because I can see the value of when we annex a new area into the city that it becomes a Monroe address. And if we do it at the time of annexation, and then that's just the expectation is the address changes, that would be one thing. So I'd be interested in hearing how people think about that, and then versus, you know, renumbering or changing, you know, the downtown area and changing out all those signs and what people think about that. So I see it as two issues, but thanks. Those are my comments right now.
Councilmember Gamble.
I totally agree with the recommendation of making no changes to the addressing of Monroe. I think it actually in keeping with while I may agree with everything the Council McGarry said, you know, as far as, you know, the why and, you know, how it would be great and to define the city, I just think at this particular time, it's the last thing that we should be putting in front of ourselves, and kind of keeping with the theme of when we talked about the projects, the capital projects, where we haven't cost them out to see what they're shovel ready because we already know that we don't even need to go down that path because we can't afford to do it. That's my two cents. So.
Thank you, Councilmember Gamble. Councilmember Gamble?
Yeah, I think I agree with everything you were saying there, Councilman McGarry. And I think that it does make sense when we do annex to have them completely shift over to the city system and not just change the zip code. So I don't know if there's a way that we can do that with the ones that are being annexed in and then hold the public hearing on the existing addresses that, like where I live now in the Firelands, hold the hearing on that to determine whether or not we want to go to the expense and all that to change those.
Thank you. I think the timing is absolutely perfect to be discussing some of this. We've talked for the last year or so or more with regards to the identity of our community and moving our community forward. The adventure begins here. You know, who are we? It has been a question that we've asked ourselves for a number of years, going back to when we had the study done that brought the recommendations with regards to the city's identity. I've said it before, I think that as we continue to grow, yet we continue to maintain the current system, we'll be known as the redheaded stepchild of Everett. And by moving forward, and Councilmember Gearing put it quite well, that this is a long-term vision. It's not something that's going to happen overnight necessarily. It might happen quicker with those that are annexed. But it's something that we should work forward, and if we don't begin now, then when? And so to at least move the process forward, I think would be highly supportive of the other decisions and directions that the city has taken and is taking currently. Councilmember Gearing?
Thank you. And appreciate the other comments are made. Like I said, that this is not our highest priority at this time. And yet I don't want it to get lost. We were focused on things that are right in front of us right now. But part of our job also is to be looking, you know, 10 years down the road, and what is our city going to look like? So again, more of the motivation behind that. I certainly think that a public hearing would be at least we can, you know, see if anybody cares. They don't care. I mean, you know, maybe people would be totally in favor. Maybe we'll have a bunch of people say it's the craziest idea ever. And certainly July or even later, sometime, I think, before the end of summer, however, would be great. But again, with the working with the post office, I think my initial concern was just the amount of time that that takes. And I don't know if we not start leaving the address just the way it is, but making it Monroe 98272. It sounds like it's just kind of getting their attention. We brought this up before. I was just trying to figure out what the actual process is to actually, you know, we're just trying to say, hey, we need to switch this, or, you know, is there forms to fill out? I don't know what there actually is to do, for example, for like a Roosevelt Road, which has been in the city for 4 years and still has a snow homeless address.
They're very vague on the process, and pretty much it is if the people who live there ask, they'll consider it. So, do they say that, you know, if the city council, you know, the city, you know, sends a request to them, they'll ignore it? But I guess, you know, basically it's, we try and see what happens.
So anything we would annex with the Snohomish Washington address currently, but yet it's in the city of Monroe, essentially they don't care? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, because
there has to be some sort of a process.
The name on your address is what post office delivers your mail.
I understand that.
And they're large and don't want to change. Pretty much.
Well, it happens in, well, I guess everything around Snohomish is already Snohomish, so that's not the same. Well, they certainly change the addresses there. Well, that is a little frustrating to hear. I certainly don't know why they wouldn't. I mean, 4 years is a long time to be in the city of Monroe and still have an address that doesn't say Monroe. And again, it doesn't go towards a sense of community. It doesn't go towards knowing where you are and thinking of yourself as part of Monroe when you rank Snohomish, you know, on your address, you know, and yet you live in the city of Monroe. So I don't know what we can do to do that. For me, number one is essentially not, you know, is a non-negotiable. It's something that we absolutely need to do. Whether or not we, you know, expand the old numbering system, that's something that the community should definitely weigh in on. But anything we can do to continue to prod, I think, would be well served. It's a small thing, but it's the principle of having an area in town that isn't Monroe, and yet it is legally. So that will always bother me. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilmember Camp.
Councilmember Williams.
Councilmember Lee.
Thank you, Mayor. Brad, based on what you just said about the post office, if we decided to go forward with option number two, which is the most complete option, do we even have any guarantee that the post office will change anyways?
Basically, we can do the first half, but not the second half.
Right.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it would seem to me that would be an important piece of information to have before I was able to say how much further I'd be willing to go with this.
Sure.
The other piece of information that's missing is even just a rough estimate of the cost of doing number two. You know, because I think there are people in the city who would completely agree with Councilman Gehring that they want to be unique and they want to be their own city, and that's one way to distinguish themselves from Everett. I think there's other people that would say they really don't care. So, but without knowing what the cost is associated with it, it'd be hard to get a, you know, good feedback from the public on whether or not to do it.
I guess a couple things. One is it's hard to determine the cost because we don't know what the direction is because are we going to keep the ones that are named the way they are, or are we going to make everything numbers, you know, from zero is Main and Lewis, and you go, you know, first, second, third, fourth, fifth out and change the names of the named streets, or we're really going to change the numbered streets?
Yeah.
Because actually, that would give us a much different
lots of ideas on that, but that's not really. Yeah, and I'm sure Councilman Gehring will keep us here.
That would make a big difference in the number of sites that has to be changed.
But my point is that if we're going to have some type of a public hearing, having some options and numbers makes sense. Otherwise, we're kind of wasting time.
Okay, thank you. Councilmember Camp.
Thank you. My biggest concern is if we're going to have a public hearing, I would like to know the intent of the people, whether or not they really want to go down this road at all. As Councilmember Williams said, there may be people who just don't care, or there may be people who are very enthralled with the idea of having a unique numbering system for the city as a unique identifier for our area. Personally, the costs are important, but if this is a long-term project, and I'm sure we're talking well more than 2 years, possibly 10, possibly who knows how long, that could be spread over time. We could adjust to it. I think most important, I would really like to have a public hearing and find out what people's intent are, if they're even interested. If this is not something they're interested in, we need to use up a little bit of council time and go on from there. Thank you.
What's that? All right. Well, I think it sounds like we'd like to have a little bit more information back, possibly. Yep. Some idea what you might be able to bring back?
I'm happy to throw out some ideas. I'll send you an email.
Okay.
It'll take you lunch.
For less than $25. So.
Yeah. We'll let you think about it. We'll let Councilmember Green
harass
you.
Can I make one comment?
Absolutely.
Do we want to have a motion that directs staff to request the change of things that are in the city be changed to Monroe, to the post office?
Oh. We don't need to make a motion necessarily. If there's consensus, we can direct staff to contact the
Roosevelt Road area. I mean, that should be Monroe, Washington. I mean, that's. I'm sorry.
I think it's been clear. I think that we can move forward with reaching out to the public, to the post office to start the process of changing, especially the Roosevelt Road area.
4 years. That's a long time.
Yeah. Well, can I make a comment on that?
Certainly.
Yeah. I didn't get that was clear. So I might be in the minority. I think you reaching out and finding out exactly what the process is. And letting, because it sounds like we don't even know what the process is, if the people requested or if they would even listen to something from us. I think if we start doing it for Roosevelt Bridge, but we don't have a clear idea that we're going to do it for every annexation, you know, that might cause some issues. So I think we need to have clarity on, are we going to do it for the annexations? And I'm not necessarily against that. I can see the purpose of doing that. But just doing it for Roosevelt Bridge and not having a clear idea of what we're doing totally. I'm not talking about the numbered system or changing all the roads. I'm just even talking about annexation. But just doing it for Roosevelt Bridge, there's other areas we've annexed. Mm-hmm. Maybe not nothing.
No, my intent was not just to be specific to Roosevelt Road. It'd be to anything that we've annexed that still continues to have a Snohomish address. Ask the post office what
the process is.
Do, and or request that they provide us with the information to begin or make that change.
We've asked the post office, they say residents.
The residents have the request?
Right, but they don't have, you know, that's just what they told us. They, you know, so I was just thinking, why don't we just ask as the city and see what they do? As opposed to, because...
By the way, this has been in our town for 4 years, and it's got their own town name. Yeah.
So we haven't annexed any other developments? Or
everything else is annexed.
Everything
is in the right address. Yeah.
So that is the only area. Okay.
All right.
Thanks.
Councilor Gary?
Sure, yeah, and I was just going to say, so we talked, so Roosevelt Bridge was talked about tonight. So it'd be, and in the future, if we're annexing an area that also already has Snohomish, this process and be paving the way to make that happen in the future if there are other areas. I think Southwest Monroe, if we're ever able to annex that, also has a small Snohomish, a section of Snohomish addresses as well. So we want to, this is essentially blaze the trail for how to do that in the future. So
can I ask one?
Please, yeah.
So Brad, if we were to do that, do the people have to change their addresses to all their billers? And so somebody has to go through and change everything to Monroe 98272. So they would have to do it for everything. And I guess that was my only rationale, was to hear with the public. And if they are completely behind that, it might make it easier for the post office for us to do it if they really want to. So, I mean, there is a hassle in to doing that on the resident side. So,
you refer a comment?
Yeah.
That's pretty standard, I think, when annexations happen. That just happens.
Just change.
Yeah. I mean, when Marysville annexed a big chunk of Lake Stevens, where I have family, they all of a sudden just have Marysville addresses. So,
use it goes. Change in the city.
Their streets stay the same, but they
instead
of Lake Stevens, Washington, you know, 298 or whatever it was, it went to Marysville, Washington, 92.
So I guess, why has it been different out here?
And that's my question as well. Why is it so difficult here? I mean, my understanding is it happens normally that way. When you get annexed, your address becomes that of the city.
We ask them, they say no. They say the people have to ask. That's the local.
You know that axe you have on that wall?
Yeah.
And ask again.
Federal property, bad idea.
Okay. Thanks, Brad.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you, Councilman McGarian. I think it's valuable discussion, and at some point in the future, when I'm old and gray, I'll be able to say I'm
in a
row. Yes. What's that? Yeah. All right. Moving along, I want to draw your attention to the staff reports. I hope that you had an opportunity to read through those. We have three that are here this evening from the Parks and Recreations, from our operations for Public Works, as well as an update on the
wastewater
treatment plant. I'd like to invite council, and if you haven't done so already, to call Jacob or John and ask them to take you on a tour of the improvements out there. It's pretty. If you haven't been out there in a while, you'll definitely see some big changes.
Bring your work
great
boots.
Pictures in there. What's that?
Bring your work boots.
Absolutely, mutters, please. Yeah. But I think you'll find that the progress that we're making is very good. So. With that, we've got any other department? Diane, anything else to report this evening?
I think you each have a sheet in your desk there of the latest sales tax numbers, and I just wanted to get that to you because in February we received the sales tax revenues from December sales, and that's usually our biggest month of the year for sales tax. The good news is that it's not below budget, the bad news is not above budget. It came in pretty much right at what we figured it would. But I just wanted to tell you that. And one other thing. Last Saturday was National Passport Day, and we participated. Three finance employees opened City Hall from 8 to noon to process passports, and it was a huge success. There were people waiting at the door when they opened at 8. That for the full 4 hours, all three of them worked steadily. There was a steady stream of people and people waiting. Everyone was so pleased that they could apply for passports on a Saturday, which I guess you normally cannot. And it was a huge success, so much so that even though National Passport is once a year, Passport Day is once a year, we're thinking maybe of doing it once every 6 months just because people were thrilled. We had people from Darrington, Marysville. People were thrilled to be able to come do this. So obviously there's a need.
Great. Thank you. Chief, anything? Jeff, anything to share this evening? And Ben? Brad, anything else that isn't in your report? Great report, by the way.
I was just going to mention that we did get our new employee, our senior engineer. So, and he jumped right in, and we're making plans. So,
very good. If I may, I'd just like to direct your attention to the opening comments that Mr. Falberg provided under the Public Works Department report, especially. The recognition of Supervisor Kim Shaw and Plans Examiner Rick Carnes. They have received many compliments from the community over the last few weeks. Some of those directly to myself. And So hats off to them for the information they put forward. Okay, the administrative wrap.
I do, and I just want to short tail on that. I was going to make mention of that this evening. Every Tuesday night we get together and we do our thing here, and we unfortunately don't hear a lot of positive feedback. But I want to tell you that I'm very proud of our staff and the job that council's been doing. Our team is working well, and this includes each and every one of you folks. Robert just mentioned the accolades that a couple of our employees received. We're hearing that on a daily basis around town. Businesses are coming to Monroe because permitting is an easy process here. They get helped from start to finish. And Brad and I actually just conducted an interview of a potential future employee for Monroe, and as she came in for the interview, she was carpooling, and the person that she was carpooling with went, wow, you're going to interview at Monroe? What a great place to possibly work, and brought up an example of an experience that person had had with the finance department in regards to a leak that they had had with their water system to their home, and how our water department went out there and helped them, and then finance staff helped them with adjusting their water bill and the like. So on a daily basis, we're getting positive feedback about your staff, the community staff, and the job that you're doing as well. So I just want to make mention of that this evening. The draft agenda for March 20th, 2012. It's pretty bare at this point in time. We have a consent agenda, minutes, and bills. New business, we don't have anything at this point. In the final action, we have the second and final reading of the mixed-use setbacks we talked about this morning, or this evening. And then under number two, I wrote down the ethics code amendment. I want to bring that back next week and get that looked at. And then we have the draft agenda for March 27th. Okay, as we look at the long-range agenda, I emailed the council earlier this week in regards to the future July 3rd meeting that we have on the books. The question was, do we want to have that meeting? In addition to that, working with the planning staff, they're also curious about the April 24th meeting. It is blacked out at this point in time, but in order to get some of their workload done, we may want to look at having that meeting if people are around on the 24th of April. So I'd like to get kind of an answer on both of those.
I'm available for both.
July 3rd, that's me.
I'm sorry, were you talking about March 27th, April 24th? Are you talking about July 3rd?
July 3rd and April 24th.
Correct.
Yeah.
July 3rd and April 24th.
July 3rd, not on July 3rd. Because when you're a public, you're something else where you're looking to have a meeting or a public discussion, I don't think that would be
correct. We can postpone everything or push everything back in July if that works for everybody.
Sure. Yeah.
That would give a 2-week gap, though, would it not?
Just yeah. The July 3rd things is the comprehensive plan amendments. That's the quickest we can get comprehensive plan amendments done, so that would just push it back to the 10th for having those done. And then on the 24th, in order to get the zoning regulations done for the going to election on Roosevelt Ridge and the establishment of the Transportation Benefit District, we have to adopt those ordinances on those days in order to keep the timeline going and to make the elections in November.
Well, what are those days?
That's the meeting on the 24th of April. Yeah.
Sounds like the 24th is a go.
Yeah.
April 24th is great.
And then July we'll move everything back and not do the July 3rd meeting?
Sure.
Does that mean a two? Well, I'm just, does that mean we'll have 2 weeks off, or should we flip the?
I mean, if we want to move it to the 26th.
Yeah, do we just want to flip those two meetings
before? We've got 2 weeks. We can certainly do that. Absolutely.
On the 26th, it would be too early, though, to take any action on plan stuff based on the dates,
right?
Well, I was doing it without moving the 4th, so I'm looking here real quick to see if we can have enough time to get it, if we could do it on the 26th to pull that stuff back. And, yeah, instead of the 7th, the 3rd of July. It's a week earlier.
May I?
Yes, you may.
By all means, let's not move it earlier. Okay. Later is good.
Okay.
It's
10, 17, and 24 in July then.
So we will have two.
That'd be my point.
It's not.
Have three meetings, but
it's not unusual that we would have a 2 week gap.
No, we have that.
We have the fifth week.
December.
So we're going to
Thank you.
Before we adjourn here, Council, I just wanted to let Council be aware that I am preparing an op-ed that I'll be submitting to the local papers in regards to the appeal of the North Kelsey property and the agreement. So I will copy you on that as well as my opinion, not meant to be the opinion of Council. So I just want you to be aware that I'll be submitting that to the papers here shortly. It is not an op-ed on the pros and cons of Walmart. It's just an op-ed on the position that the city sits today and the impacts that that may or could be felt by the city if there's a delay or if the the agreement is not fulfilled. So just wanted you to be aware of that. And lastly, I sent an email to our directors, management staff here last week, and I want to share that with Council tonight because I think it's appropriate for you as well. And I also want to say how I appreciate your leadership. This is by John Maxwell. It's a quote of the day. The pessimist complains about the wind. The optimist expects it to change, and the leader adjusts the sails. With that said, unless there's anything else, we will stand in adjournment. We are adjourned.
Yes.